Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 30th, 2015. Today, we're pleased to be joined by our co-host, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great. Very hot here in Massachusetts, but nonetheless, definitely, it's better than the cold and snow of last winter. Mm-hmm. So, DR, there's a bunch of stuff that's gone on over the past couple of weeks that I think we can weave together into an idea that climate hawks might want to think about. So let me put out the chess pieces, and you and I can move them around and see where we end up.
Sure.
The first is that, of course, we all have spoken in the past about the drilling in the Arctic, that Shell wants to drill up in the Chukchi Sea, and we went through the Kayaktivists that were trying to block the departure of the drilling rig itself. Mm-hmm. In the interim, they had an icebreaker. An icebreaker got damaged, has to go back to port. And this past week, activists dangled from the bridge out in Portland, Oregon, to prevent... Mm-hmm. to put their bodies in the way of letting this icebreaker go back out into the ocean and allow the drilling to proceed. And we can give more detail on that, but that's one idea. Mm-hmm. Second idea is that here in Boston, after much falderal, the bid for the Boston Olympics essentially collapsed because of citizen opposition. And thirdly, over the last several weeks, and in a building crescendo after many, many years, the Black Lives Matter seems to be coalescing into not just an online entity, but also a real people in the same room kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me, DR, let's go through those. Let's just talk through, and then we'll try and draw a conclusion. First of all, what happened up in Portland? Do you remember? What was the story there?
Talk about a bridge over troubled waters. Several activists with Greenpeace literally rappelled from a bridge and dangled from the bridge through which a shell a ship was supposed to pass as it was supposed to go to the Arctic to start doing unnecessary drilling. After several hours of a standoff of sorts, the shell ship turned around and retreated, and shortly thereafter, according to the Seattle Times, authorities forced protesters to sort of move away and threatened some of them with arrest because they essentially the authorities said, you know, you've already made your point, the ship is turned back, and at one point a number of these protesters were threatened with fines for every hour that they continued to dangle from a bridge. Some, my understanding is that some did come down, but others are still decide to hang in there, and it's a great
literally,
and it's a great bit of citizen activism. And as I read the story of the Shell drilling ship turning back, I thought to myself that Shell doesn't have any right to complain, because we talked a while back about how Shell wrote a letter to the UN along with BP and others, calling for carbon pricing, calling for a carbon tax. And if you remember what Tim DeChristopher, the climate activist who was involved in the civil disobedience demonstration in Utah that was depicted in the documentary Bitter 70, said that climate activists have to be a carbon tax in lieu of an actual carbon tax.
Right.
So if you think about it, what these activists did was what Shell requested, to put a price on the emission of carbon, to make sure that there is a charge and a fee
and a cost,
a price and a cost to extracting dirty energy. So why would Shell complain when these activists have simply done what's supposed to be done, which is to basically impose some sort of penalty for the exploitation of the environment and the development of dirty energy? There's nothing wrong with what they did. Shell ought to be proud of these activists.
So you should be careful what you ask for. Okay, so the second thing, DR, you're very good at explaining stuff. here in Boston, the Olympic Railroad sort of ran out of track or ran off a cliff or something, but all of a sudden it's been dropped. The bid's been withdrawn. What happened there?
Essentially, the Olympic Committee basically realized that the citizen activism was just too strong. That a lot of a lot of the complaints about potential cost overruns were just too strong. That the voices of the people could not be resisted, and ultimately, a decision was made to pull the plug on trying to bring the Olympics to Boston in 2024.
And these guys, I mean, various commentators said, "Oh yeah, the opposition is 10 guys with a Twitter account, right?" And they were belittled and made fun of, but ultimately they catalyzed the coalition, right? They catalyzed the opposition to the whole I don't know, debacle of the Olympics, right?
It is a modern day David and Goliath story, and again, it just shows you what happens when citizens come together and will not allow themselves to be bullied by the powerful. You know, the old slogan about the people versus the powerful, and this time the people win. When the people come together, the people united cannot be defeated by the U.S. Olympic Committee. That's what we saw here.
Well, I guess, I mean, no, not necessary. I guess I'm not kicking a dead horse here, but the Olympic bid never fully embraced the idea that they were building a city for the green future, and that in 2050 you would want to look back and say, boy, Boston became a green, sustainable city because of the good things that were built for the 2024 Olympics. That was never anywhere on the horizon. It was part of, I think, the opposition to the whole thing. And the second kick I would give the dead horse of the Olympics is that it was, at least in my mind, a small number of people got this idea, and it was something of a self-serving idea because there was a lot of construction people that were proposing the Olympics. And in much the same way, the much hated Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, is the same thing, right? Some guys get together and they say, this takes care of us, so the few, this thing is done in service of the few, but we all get told how great it's going to be, and we're all going to be happy at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. And in a time when we're constantly discussing, and we've been discussing since the Occupy movement, populism versus elitism, to see populism to defeat elitism, to give it a resounding defeat, is something impressive to see, definitely.
And so then the third sort of part here that we've seen over the last few weeks is the much more painful question of the Black Lives Matter movement and actually the effort to actually call out these horrible things that are happening, right, DR? I mean, you had an interesting piece in the Washington Monthly this past week, I think, right?
Yes,
What were
yes.
you, I mean, what point were you making? What were you saying?
The point I was trying to make was that the Black Lives Matter movement and they were behaving in a way very similar to the climate activists who recently protested Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. That in both cases, they wanted issues of critical importance moved to the tippy top of the political and cultural discussion. And it took their and they realized that the only way they could do so was by engaging in a form of civil disobedience, engaging in a form of petitioning government officials for a redress of grievances. And when there is no other way to make your voice heard on matters of critical importance, you do what Black Lives Matter did, and you did what the climate activists in New Hampshire did. And there's nothing wrongheaded about that. That is pure patriotism. That is as American as mom baseball and apple pie. And in both cases, they were able to get their issues moved into the upper echelon of the political and cultural discussion in the United States. And hats off to both of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's the bumper sticker about, I'm not sure I can quote it, but well-behaved women seldom make history kind of thing.
Exactly,
It's hard to
exactly.
be well-behaved when you're trying to rattle the infrastructure that just won't pay attention.
Exactly.
But so the take-home lesson, right? We've seen these three examples. They are, I would put it and say that people speaking out, even in what appears to be certainly the Olympics looked to be inevitable last January, right? People speaking out have that has consequence, right? And people should not be afraid to do it.
And exactly, and it's great to see this within the context of another example of positive consequences from citizens speaking out. The report that was in Bloomberg Business on July the 28th by a Senator John Hoeven of North Dakota, indicating that he has some sort of inside information indicating that the Obama administration will finally give a thumbs down to the Keystone XL pipeline during the August congressional recess. And that obviously would not have happened without the citizen activism that was inspired by such figures as James Hansen and Bill McKibben. To think that 4 years ago, this time 4 years ago, it seemed like a proverbial lead pipe cinch that the
Right.
Keystone XL pipeline would be greenlit, and to go in 4 years to see now a United States senator who has more information than you or I do, basically saying that his understanding is that the Obama administration is going to, recognize the flaws that these activists sided with the idea and kill the idea. That says something. That is a that I mean that will be, if it is true that the Obama administration will in fact give a thumbs down to it, that will be the citizen activism story of the decade,
Right,
if indeed this does happen.
well, I guess the what's the word? The embodiment of these ideas took place today down in the State House, on the Boston Common and in the Massachusetts State House. So there was a rally and a lobbying effort today at the Massachusetts State House to convince the state representatives and the governor to extend what are called net metering caps. And that was a chance, and trust me, it'll happen again. There'll be other opportunities, but that was a place where people from the state activists went and actually talked to their representatives and explained what they wanted to see. So the net metering cap, this is this arcane kind of thing that you have to sort of wrap your head around to understand what the battle is. But when people, particularly companies, commercial companies, put in a solar panel on their roof, they get to have what the electricity they produce gets to go on the grid, and they get paid for it, basically. So part of the financial justification of building these big solar panel arrays is to get this net metering payback, and that's what makes the proposition go financially. But of course, the state has built in, for various reasons, a cap on how much money, how many of these projects can be done. We've approached that cap in most of the state. And so all of a sudden, new solar energy projects of a large scale, these are not households, but of a larger scale, can't be built, right? And so the activists are saying, hey, raise that cap. It's an artificial limit the state decides anyway, right? Raise that cap and let us build more solar panels on, I don't know, your favorite box store, and that was the demand, right? And so,
Exactly.
where do you think we are with that today in terms of the likelihood that the state will raise the net metering limits, basically?
Well, I'm pretty positive, and in fact, a few hours after the event took place at the State House, the Springfield Republican newspaper reported that Governor Charlie Baker stated that his administration would file legislation concerning the solar net metering cap, presumably to increase it. It was unclear from the story about by how much it would be increased. It would be interesting to see the Baker administration define the lobbying entity known as Associated Industries of Massachusetts, which basically turns up its elitist nose at the thought of clean energy and citizens controlling their own energy. I think if indeed the Baker administration does go ahead and pushes for a raising of the net metering cap, it will be another example of citizen activism paying off, because the point of these citizen activists is that the state has not only an economic obligation to raise the net metering cap, it has a moral obligation to raise the net metering cap, because we need as much clean energy as possible. So therefore, if the Baker administration does say, let's raise the net metering cap, it'll prove once again something that Frederick Douglass said so many years ago, which is that power concedes nothing without a demand.
DR, I couldn't have ended it better. We'll have to leave it there, which is a marvelous point. Everyone who's listening to this podcast should say those words and then say it again, DR, what you just said, so
Power
everyone gets
concedes
it.
nothing without a demand.
Power concedes nothing without a demand. That is a great turn of phrase. Anyway, we will post the links to most of what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.wordpress.com. You can leave us a comment there. You can send us an email. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on your smartphone using Stitcher. And of course, you can find us on iTunes under the podcast heading. Search for Massachusetts Climate Action. So there's lots of ways you can get in. You can follow the show. We tweet at massclimate, and I tweet the show out occasionally at TedMcIntyre100. And DR, you tweet occasionally at DR Tucker, right?
Yes, that's correct.
So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much, DR.
Thanks.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.